Hi, welcome to this special episode of the Edgar Rice Burroughs podcast. My name is Tim DeForest. This is being released in early September 2022, and we haven't had any new content for pretty much the entire summer. Now, Scott Stewart, Jess Terrell, and I are only able to get together three or four times a year for full-length episodes. I have, over the past year or so, been trying to do little mini-episodes so that we do have content more regularly. I'm afraid I spent a number of weeks in this past summer in the hospital. It wasn't life-threatening, and I'm fully recovered now, but that is the reason for the lack of content we've had over the last few months. Scott, Jess, and I will be getting together this month, September 2022, to record a full-length episode on the novel Tarzan and the Ant-Men. So keep an ear open for that. We will have more stuff coming up soon. Now, this episode is another segment of what I read this month. It will be covering the books that I read in August of 2022. And I'm just going to do them in chronological order this time. So the first book I finished in August was Gun Barons, The Weapons That Transformed America and the Men Who Invented Them by John Bainbridge Jr. Now, this was a fun, well-written history of the various inventors and industrialists responsible for advancements in weapons technology in the 19th century. So Colt, Remington, Winchester, Smith & Wesson, Spencer, and Henry all invented or invested in weapons such as revolvers and repeating rifles. There was a combination of industrial age technological advancements and the politics of the day that include westward expansion and the Mexican War and the Civil War, that led to a time of innovation. The various players often clashed with each other in pursuit of government contracts or patent infringement lawsuits, but what they accomplished changed the world. The author allows us to decide for ourselves whether these changes were largely good or bad. I also appreciate how the author used specific events, such as the first use of revolvers by Texas Rangers in 1844, or the use of Spencer rifles by the Union cavalry in the Civil War to emphasize the enormous impact the new weapons had on the world. Now, the next book I read in August was Satan Takes the Helm by Calvin Clements. This was an excellent noir novel from 1952. Now, I love the setting. The narrator is a captain of a tramp freighter, and the elderly owner of the ship has a young wife who takes the role of the femme fatale. The wife, naturally, wouldn't mind if her husband was dead. The captain is attracted to her. In fact, he has trouble turning down her physical advances, even when saying no is clearly the wise thing to do. He balks at the idea of murder, but the wife manages to twist the situation to get him involved in her plot otherwise. Most of the action takes place on the ship during a journey across the Pacific. As I said, I love the setting. The author doesn't romanticize the hard work involved in working on a freighter, but at least for those of us who never actually had to work on a freighter, it has romantic appeal to it anyways. That, plus a few unusual twists the author puts into the standard femme fatale plot, make this a fascinating novel. Once again, that was Satan Takes the Helm by Calvin Clements. Next book was Satan's Sabbath. I did not intentionally read two books in a row with Satan in the title, but that's the way it turned out. This was the last of the original executioner novels that ends the war against the mafia on a high note. It was after this novel that author Don Pendleton sold the series to another publisher, and they had the main character, Mac Bolan, switch from battling the mafia to battling international terrorism. So this is what caps off his war against the mafia. And there's several strong action scenes at the beginning, including Bolan in a sports car armed with a grenade launcher and a dogfight against an armored limousine. The bulk of the novel then builds remarkable tension as Bolan, knowing his cover as a top hitman might be blown in any moment, deals with the last two remaining New York mob factions, eventually tricking them into battling each other. It's a strong conclusion to the original series. The next book was actually a graphic novel, a collection of a six-issue comic book series Superman 78, and I really love this one. It was a miniseries set in the Christopher Reeve movie universe, and the script captures the ambiance and the characters of the movie perfectly. Wilfredo Torres's art also does a great job of visually capturing them. Superman looks like the Reeves version, Lex Luthor looks like Gene Hackman, and so on. The plot brings in Brainiac, the Bottle City of Kandor, and other elements of Superman's Silver and Bronze Age mythology, telling a strong story with Superman's moral sensibilities and determination to protect the innocent being the emotional centerpiece of it all. It's great fun from start to finish. Then I read Gated Prey by Lee Goldberg. This is an excellent police procedural with a great protagonist. What I like about Eve Ronan is that she is a capable and brave cop, but she's not a superwoman. Her emotions and her reactions are completely human, making us empathize with her completely. Her rapport with her more experienced partner, Duncan, is also spot on perfect. The story involves two cases, investigating a violent home invasion, and then later looking into a possible fetal abduction, where a baby is removed from a woman's womb and stolen. In both cases, the investigations unfold in a logical and, to my untrained eye, realistic manner, both come to satisfying conclusions. There's several great twists in both investigations that keep things hopping. This is the third in the series. Though I'm normally very careful about reading a series in proper order, I started with this one after picking up the ebook when it was on sale one day. Eve is dealing with the consequences of events from the first two novels, but the author is careful not to drop in too many spoilers. So I'm looking forward to reading both of the earlier novels. And in fact, I'll be reviewing one of them in a few minutes. As an audiobook, I went through El Borak and Other Desert Adventures by Robert E. Howard. These are stories I've read a number of times in the past, and they're among my favorite adventure stories, especially the novella Three-Bladed Doom and the short story Trail of the Bloodstained God. Then a classic mystery, Agatha Christie's The Murder on the Lynx, an early Hercule Poirot novel. Now, this is a wonderfully complex murder mystery with more than its share of twists and turns. There's several occasions late in the novel where it looks as if everything has been figured out, only for there to be a twist that changes the solution dramatically. But Poirot has it all figured out, of course. In the end, all the clues hang together properly. As usual, Dame Agatha both delights and, since we think we should have figured it out after Poirot explains it all, she also kind of annoys us. Someday, I'll figure out a Christie novel, but it hasn't happened yet. Duel in Dodge City is the fourth in a new series of westerns called The Guns of Legend. In this novel, we meet an agent of Alistair Legend that we haven't encountered before. And the first few short chapters of the book do a superb job of introducing us to him. Lucas Chambers is a gunfighter, but we also quickly learn that he's cool-headed when facing danger, that he comes up with clever plans, but he's also able to improvise on the fly, and that he has chronic hero syndrome. In the first chapter, he's going up against another gunfighter who beat an aging prostitute to death because the woman was the sister of a friend. Soon after, he randomly meets a child whose beloved dog was stolen and immediately undertakes the task of recovering the dog. We also learn that Lucas's wife was murdered, leaving him in some ways is a very cynical outlook on life. The details of how his wife died and an encounter with the man responsible are weaved into the plot. Now, the main plot, Lucas's mission, is to prevent the assassination of presidential candidate Rutherford B. Hayes. He is to eliminate one of the assassins, take his place, and find out who else is involved in the plot. But events do not proceed smoothly. Lucas soon finds himself saddled with a partner he does not want, a woman who is almost certainly insane and who either loves Lucas or who wants to kill him, or both. But circumstances leave him with no choice but to accept this situation. The story's punctuated not just by some great action scenes, a gunfight in a hotel room is particularly exciting, but also by the level of suspense maintained from start to finish. Lucas has to pretend to be stalking Rutherford Hayes, while at the same time watching his back in case other assassins try to take him out. And all of this, remember, is happening while he's looking after a partner who clearly lives in Crazy Town. It all comes to a wonderfully original conclusion that I don't want to hint at. It's best if the final confrontation with the bad guys sneaks up on you without any knowledge of how it's going to play out. That was Duel in Dodge City by Brody Weatherford. Next was an old tie-in novel, Dick Tracy by William Johnston. This is a fun novel about a villain with a computer-like mind using an experimental drug to steal important knowledge with the goal of eventually taking over society. Tracy doggedly battles the bad guy, getting captured several times. That was a staple situation from the comic strip. And eventually taking out Mr. Computer's henchmen. But to catch Mr. Computer himself, Tracy has to use the experimental drug to alter his own thought patterns and do something the villain can't predict in advance. Now, the plot is a little silly, but it's played straight, and it's very entertaining. William Johnston was a master of tie-in novels, and he used straightforward prose and logical plot development to develop a strong story about the toughest cop on the comics page. That's, once again, Dick Tracy by William Johnston. Lost Hills by Lee Goldberg was the first of the Eve Ronin novels. So I'm just getting caught up on the ones that I didn't read after having read the third in the series earlier this month. Now, fortunately, Goldberg was careful not to give away any major spoilers in that later novel. So this novel was still good and it was suspenseful. Eve has recently been promoted to homicide after a video of her arresting a drunken celebrity goes viral. Because of this, many of the more experienced detectives resent her. The case she's working on is the apparent brutal murder of a woman and her two children. There's no bodies, though, and evidence at the crime scene seems to indicate they were all dismembered and the bodies disposed of somewhere. Eve is obviously a good detective and capable of sharp insights, but she also shows her inexperience on several occasions. And that's what makes her a great character. Once again, Goldberg presents us with a three-dimensional human being with whom we can completely empathize. I love, for instance, the way poor Eve puts her foot in her mouth on at least two occasions when speaking with the woman in charge of the crime scene unit. I also enjoy how she gradually earns the respect and establishes a wonderful rapport with her veteran partner, Duncan. The overall plot is well-constructed. It's a realistic police procedural. And in the end, Eve solves the case, which involves an awesome and unexpected twist at the climax. Lost Hills is a great novel with a strong plot, equally strong protagonist, and it's well worth reading. Next one, I did Tarzan and the Ant-Man. I actually listened to this one as an audiobook with the new edition that came out using the new Edgar Rice Burroughs Authorized Library edition. The reader does an excellent job. I'm not going to say much about this more now because we'll be discussing it in our upcoming full-length episode. Also, I worked several evening shifts a couple of weeks ago, and dawdling around my house one afternoon with nothing to do, I decided to pick up Burroughs' first novel, Edgar Rice Burroughs' first novel, A Princess of Mars, and read it once again. And this is a kind of a spot decision on my part to gradually reread Edgar Rice Burroughs' book in publication order. And so that's a new project that I've undertaken. I read The Tragedy of the Korosko by Arthur Conan Doyle. This is an often grim tale written in the late 19th century of a group of European tourists in Egypt who are captured by dervishes. The bad guys are Islamic fanatics whose methods and motivations remind a modern reader of ISIS. This includes a tendency to destroy ancient monuments and a tendency to force people to choose between religious conversion or death. Some things remain the same across the decades, don't they? Doyle includes a little bit of pro-imperialism propaganda in his prose, but his vivid descriptive powers and his great characterizations generate a real sense of tension and suspense throughout the short novel. Finally, I read The Wolves of Savernake by Edward Marston. This is an historical novel set in the 11th century England. It's 20 years after the Battle of Hastings. A commission appointed by King William sets out to investigate land disputes. Two of them, there's the sometimes profane knight Ralph Delchard and the soft-spoken young lawyer Gervais Brett, are unlikely friends who work well together. This is the first in a series of medieval mysteries, because wherever Ralph and Gervais travel, sometimes somebody inevitably gets murdered. They're like the Jessica Fletchers of the 11th century. In this case, the murder victim appears to have been killed by a wolf, but the victim was also involved in a local land dispute, so Gervais and Ralph are obligated to play detective. Soon they're up to their armpits in forgery, counterfeiting, the threat of mob violence, and eventually a second murder. Ralph and Gervais are great characters, opposite personalities who complement each other nicely. The mystery is intriguing, and the author manages to recreate 11th century England accurately. I also like how the story delves into matters of religious faith with respect, without ignoring the fact that even the most faithful can sometimes go down the wrong path. It's a solid story in itself, and also a great introduction to the rest of the series. So those are the books I read in August of 2022. As I said, we will be presenting a full-length episode soon discussing Tarzan and the Ant-Men. Until then, just thank you for listening. One last time, my name is Tim DeForest. Please visit my blog at comics, old time radio, and other cool stuff. You can find a link to the books I've written there, and feel free to buy my stuff and make me wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice. Thank you again for listening.